Matt McCorkle, co-founder of the company. I was actually an actor for 20 years, and I was able to make a living at acting. Actually, Pat McCorkle cast me in a lot of productions. She did, and then she cast me as her husband. We've been married 25 years. Thank you, yes. It's working out well. What's that? It's a good role. It's a non-equity role, but there are a lot of benefits.
Welcome to Casting Actors Cast, insights for actors on acting in the business of show. Casting director Jeffrey Dreisbach takes you behind the scenes and reveals secrets to a successful acting career. You can find out more on the web at castingactorscast.com. Please enjoy, like, and share Casting Actors Cast. Now, here's your host, Jeffrey Dreisbach.
Auditions. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Part 2. I've been doing a lot of EPAs. For those of you who don't know what EPAs are, it's equity principal auditions. And many of our regional theater clients are required to have what amounts to basically an open call for its equity members. And it's kind of a unique and interesting feature that these equity members go to the Actors Equity Building in New York City, and then they sign up and then go to the appointed time, and literally the either director or producer or casting director, whoever it is, will sit there, and throughout the course of a full 8-hour day, with 1 hour for lunch, given 2 minutes each actor has the opportunity to show their stuff, so to speak, at these auditions. So I did one for the Guthrie Theater a couple of weeks back. The Guthrie, if you don't know, is in Minneapolis. It's really an extraordinarily beautiful place, a multi-million dollar facility. It happens to pay its actors quite nicely on a weekly basis. And so it's kind of a prized and coveted regional theater job. And so over a 2-day period of time, covering its entire season of offerings, its seasons, I ended up seeing 335 people. One by one, each actor came in and gave 2 minutes of their material. It could either be a monologue or two monologues or 32 bars of their song and a monologue. Now, some actors just came in and chose to do their monologue, and some actors came in to show me that they could sing, and then some actors showed me that they could dance. And it was an extraordinary 2 days to see that many actors each giving me 2 minutes. But I thought I'd like to take today and just share with you some experiences I had. Certainly not going to mention anybody's name or anything like that, but I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be interesting for you to hear from my perspective exactly what the experience was. And the first thing I'd like to share with you is, and we mentioned this a little bit in the last podcast, was when the actor walks in the room. The energy that the actor has when they walk in the room can speak volumes about how they feel about their own work, how they feel about what they're about to show me. And there are those who are excited to be there and looking forward to an opportunity to perform. And then there are those who do this so often that when they walk in the room, you can almost feel their own self-deprecating energy. And almost in an apologetic way, they walk into the room as if to say, you know, you might not think I'm very good, but I thought I would do this so that I could at least try to feel good about who I am and as an actor. And it really is that palpable. Now, I'm not, and I don't expect an actor to walk into the room always being, you know, effusive. Oh, there's a good word. Effusive and overjoyed to have the experience and, you know, sort of a fake-o-bake-o kind of false enthusiasm that I often see. What's important for me to experience is that you're genuine, that you are preparation done, and that you're just looking forward to being able to perform. You know, one of the things you can never teach an actor, and I know this both from acting experience and from being a casting person, is you can never really teach that inner joy of performance that actors have. You know, that feeling that it feels just right. I mean, your insides feel complete, satisfied, that you are happy, that you're in the moment that you're in. And that's something you can't teach. So I love it when naturally gifted performing actors come in with that attitude. And as I said in our last podcast, they come in with the attitude of, I can't wait to show you what I'm capable of. That becomes really exciting to see and really exciting to experience. And then there are those actors, and having done this for casting work for 8 years now and doing a lot of open calls, I can tell you that I see the same actors at every open call. You know, my first thought is good for them. But let me also tell you that they do the same material. I have seen from some of these actors the same monologues, the same music choices, time after time after time. It gets to the point where when they walk into the room, I kind of feel embarrassed. I kind of feel badly. And I try not to. I try to give everybody, you know, an equal opportunity, and I really want to keep myself open and exposed to what they're about to show me. And there are those times when I just see the same actor coming into the room, and he does the same monologue over and over and over again. And to the point where I sometimes, and of course I'm not allowed to say anything, I'm supposed to be just an observer, and I can take notes on their picture, their 8x10. And there are sometimes when I just want to go, dude, can you just change it up a bit? Can you just do something different? But no, I have to sort of sit there, and those are 2 minutes of my life I'll never get back again. But that's just the nature of the beast, I suppose. Then there are those actors who genuinely are happy to be there. They know that this is just another opportunity, that they put their energy and focus into the work that they're about to do. And they thank me, and I thank them, and they leave, and I always feel good about that. But during the actual audition, and this is something I want to spend a little time with now, you see the value of some of the following observations that I've made over the many, many times I've seen many, many auditions. One is, don't rush it. When you walk into the room, you don't have to feel the pressure of only having 2 minutes. You don't have to take that in with you. Your audition is your time. Take in the space. You have an appropriate energy for who you are as a person. You have to accept the premise that no two people are alike, and so therefore your audition is going to be unique to anything else that I'm going to see that day. And I think that should help you feel a little bit better. But by all means, don't feel rushed just because the equity monitor is telling you to, you know, make sure you do it within the 2 minute period of time or you're in big trouble, Buster. That's number one. Number two is, I see if you're going to be doing two monologues, for example, being very, very efficient with your introducing the monologue. If you say Romeo and Juliet, that's all you have to say. I don't know of any other writer out there who's written Romeo and Juliet other than William Shakespeare. I have actors saying, this is Romeo and Juliet, and this is when Romeo takes the poison and Friar Tuck is in despair. And, you know, I don't really need to hear any background about the work of the monologue. Now, we'll be spending a whole podcast on monologues, but just as an EPA, just as a quick audition, I just want you to know, be efficient with the introduction. Simple, clean and simple. You can tell me the character, you can tell me the play, you can tell me the author. Those are good things because I like knowing that. Here's why. I write that down. It helps me remember you for later. So that's information I can use. So just coming in and starting your monologue is also not the best of choices that you could make. So come in, brief introduction, take a breath, a beat, a pause, and then you can begin your monologue. Now, a lot of actors don't even know where to stand when they come into these kinds of auditions. And I always find that kind of funny. If you know where you're auditioning for the Guthrie Theater, for example, you'll know that it's a rather large theater and it's a pretty big space. But here's my trick to share with you about the best place to stand. When you walk into the audition room, you have to scope out where the back wall is and the front of the table where we're sitting at. That room gets cut in half. So the middle distance between the back wall and the front of the audition space is almost always a perfect default setting for where to stand. It just has the overall physical presence of you in that middle of that space lends itself really well to being focused on you and your work. And then, of course, when the monologue is over, have a prior action worked out. In other words, that you have a final beat, a button, a moment that you can hold after you're done talking. Take a nice, healthy breath, beat, pause, and then break character. Say thank you and exit the room. I know it sounds kind of silly to have to point it out like that, but boy, I can't tell you how many times the actor finishes the monologue and then turns around and says thank you and walks away so quickly that it doesn't give the viewer, it doesn't give me, the audience, an opportunity to embrace the moment that you're making at the end. And there's something to be said about the level of confidence that an actor has when they can suspend a moment, an extra beat at the end of a monologue. It really gives me a sense of you being in control. And I respond very positively to that. So I get this question all the time in a lot of the seminars and workshops that I teach at. So what are you writing down when you're writing stuff down on the back of the 8x10 where your resume is? It's a curious question, but I can understand where it's coming from. There's all of these, again, I mentioned this earlier, there's these incredible thoughts that we all have as actors. When I was acting, it's like, what are they writing down? My hair color? I don't like them. I like them. Is there a numbering system? What the hell are they writing? And then I can tell you now that here's the truth, is that we're just writing those things down that will help us remember you. So it might be if you're wearing an interesting piece of clothing, a bright color, for example, or if you don't look like your picture, I make a note of that on the back of the resume. In other words, if your picture doesn't reflect what I'm seeing coming into the room, then I need to make a note of that. And then also that helps me remember. That's also a subtle hint about making sure your picture looks like you. We'll be doing an entire podcast on pictures and resumes. I'm sure we could do a whole series, I suppose, on that. But I also write down those things that might be missing. For example, your height. I might have to guess your height. So if you don't have your height on a resume, that's really kind of a useful piece of information. Especially for film and television, your height is the only thing we can't discern when we shoot a video of you. And so your height is really, really important. Your eye color, your weight, which is really amazing that people still put their weight on there. Whatever else you put on your resume in terms of just logistical information, I don't really need to know anything else. I can tell what color eyes you have. I can get a sense of your hairstyle. You know, I can, and color, I can get all that. But what I can't get is your height. Kind of funny side story, when we were doing Sesame Street, we put the last human beings on Sesame Street. And because there were so many people that we needed to see, we literally put a tape measure on the wall so that when the actor or actress came in or out of the room, we could look at their exit as they left the room and tell exactly how tall they were. Also, surprisingly enough, there are a lot of actors who don't come clean with exactly their height. That's true. Some of the smaller or shorter actors think that they need to embellish that a bit, and some of the taller actors think that they obviously need to make themselves just a little bit shorter. I'm not sure why that is. I think that there's possibly this weird thought that it might be giving you more opportunities, and that's really not the case. The truth is always a good choice, bottom line. So those are some thoughts about auditioning and coming in and out. It's a professional situation. It's a professional atmosphere. And the what I write down on the resume is really just little keys to help me remember who you are. Now, I'm supposing that you might be wondering, now, how can somebody sit through 335 auditions and still be responsive on any level? I can tell you, frankly, that we really take those responsibilities pretty seriously when we go to EPAs. I can't say that for other casting directors that I've heard of. But for us, it's very, very important. I can tell you that last season, we found an actor to play Alan, the lead in Equus for the Pittsburgh Public Theater, out of an open call. So we always view this as an opportunity to re-see some of those people that we might know of, maybe meet some new talent that we haven't been aware of, especially if you're younger or just a new student coming in and maybe you did a showcase through your college or university and now you're at an EPA. It might be valuable to get yourself seen in front of casting people. So it might be a valuable opportunity. A lot of people think it's a waste of time, that it's a waste of energy, and I'm here to tell you that I just view it as another opportunity. The challenges are very, very apparent with the amount of opportunities that are out there, and there are challenges to getting yourself up in the morning and getting yourself signed in and get seen for stuff. But I can tell you that it's, from my point of view, there's no other better way to keep yourself feeling like you're part of this amazing community than by auditioning. I also see the same actors, or many of the same actors, for many of the theaters that we have EPAs for. And I had one actress approach me yesterday. I was doing another EPA yesterday. And this was for Playmakers Repertory Theater. And the actress said, you know, I auditioned for you last week for the Guthrie, and so I just didn't know if this was going to be wasting my time or not to see you again, and whether or not this was, you know, I didn't want to take up your time, and blah, 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 blah. And this is exactly what I told her. I said, you know, the casting director is focused on each individual project at the time that they're auditioning. I don't necessarily think of you for other projects. When I know what the parameters are for the EPA for that particular theater. So yes, it's valuable to get seen again. Plus, I also said I am getting older and seeing you more than one time is really helpful. Because that's the truth. We don't have these amazing computer brains that remember people automatically for other projects. It's a rather, I don't know, I think you give us more credit than we deserve. We are constantly needing reminding of the talent that's out there. And help us, help you, help us, you know? So I told this actress, please, please come in. And it was wonderful. She did a really, really nice job. And as a matter of fact, there's some roles that she might be right for, because no two theaters have the exact same seasons. So why not make yourself available if you can? The other thing that's important for you to understand, I say that a lot, don't I? I think it's important. I don't know. You decide if this is important or not. But when I'm watching 335 auditions, the other thing that takes place is that I try to leave myself open. And this might sound weird, but I also leave myself a little vulnerable to receive what you have to offer. And so if the actor is making really solid connections, is really invested in being in the moment, is really showing me a character without being presentational about it. In other words, inhabiting the character. You know, acting is behaving, so letting me see the behavior of the character. And then let me get a sense of who you are. Those are really, really helpful things. The last thing I want to leave you about an audition is what I learned when I went from being an actor to going into casting. I was really, really surprised at this. Because I always thought that when I left the room, the discussion must be about whether or not I was right for the role, or how did I compare to somebody else who might have auditioned, or what was the reaction from the director or the casting director about what I had just done. And now I'm sitting as a casting person with the director, and I was so surprised to hear that most often, when an actor leaves the room, the director or the producer, if it's a TV project or a film, will say, how are they to work with? It really had nothing to do with the actual audition, but directors and producers need to rely on the casting director to find out about your reputation, about what kind of person you are. And we'll go to great lengths to investigate your background, either by calling a director that you might have worked with or just, you know, finding out more about you if we're not sure. But oftentimes we're very sure because we've cast you in something before or we know about you. But your reputation goes a lot further than you might think. Hey, thanks so much for listening to this podcast. We'll see you next time on Casting Actors Cast.
You've been listening to Casting Actors Cast with host Jeffrey Dreisbach. Find out more at castingactorscast.com and let us know if you would like us to cover topics you're interested in. Thanks for listening. I'm Matthew DeSarno.